Okay, moving on. You've got your timeline written out. Let's get into Egypt. Okay, we'll take a break in a moment, but let's get into Egypt. What did the Egyptians believe? Because I wanted to put this first because, let's face it, the Israelites, 430 years of the captivity among Egyptian people, was there anything about their society, their religious beliefs, their worship cultus, their practice of worship, was there anything about that that would have influenced them? Probably. I mean, we've got to be able to say that there's got to be something there that maybe a bunch of Israelites were fine with those deities, kind of gave themselves over to those things. Or we know what the Israelites were like, right, when they were wandering around in the wilderness. It's quite possible that the influence of them, of their gods, was significant over them. We don't really know, but we do know that when Yahweh, which we know from the passage that we just read, introduces himself to the Israelites by saying, I'm that God of your forefathers who told you these stories and maybe even wrote them down, which is a great defense against the whole, oh, you can't buy into somebody just sharing oral stories. You know, he chose Abraham, the people that write things down. And then having them there in Egypt, what we do know is that the Egyptian Godhead and their system was significantly different than who Yahweh is. And we're going to see tonight that Yahweh juxtaposed himself or put himself against those and even defeated those gods of the Egyptian pantheon. Okay, first, let's look at this picture. This picture describes the significance of their main deity, who is Ra. Now, when you get into Egyptian pantheon and study ancient Egyptian belief systems, you have to be ready to be confused all the time with how the Egyptians changed their minds or changed the gods' names or changed the stories. And so we can say most of the Egyptians thought of their main deity for a lot of time as Ra. But you may have also heard Re. You may have also heard Amon-Re. And you may have heard all kinds of different things about, no, Osiris was the key deity for them. The difference is how the belief system changed over time. Now, isn't this significant for us that as we look at Egyptology and we see how much it's changed over time, we have to compare that kind of shifting and changing of a belief system with the Hebrews and with Christians. And we have to be able to look at that and say, is there a difference between the solidarity of belief around a monotheistic worship of Yahweh and what has happened through the Egyptian history and their changing of thought? I'll say one thing about that, and I will say that God has come alongside of his people through time to bring them back to the place of solidarity in truth. Bring them back to that place of saying, this is what is true. This is who I am. And that's what's happening on Mount Sinai. He is once again saying, perhaps Israel being influenced by Egypt in such a powerful way, you need to know who I am. I'm bringing you back to who I am. And I'm going to reveal even more. Okay, so Ra was their main deity mostly. Okay, they're a polytheistic civilization, as was every other civilization around the world. Now remember, there are other peoples all over the world, people in Egypt or in Asia. There are people up in Europe. Stonehenge is ancient. Stonehenge in the Stone Age is back here, I think somewhere in this area here in the 2000s. So there's lots of people around the world, and everybody in the world that we've been able to dig out of the dirt and sand and study was polytheistic, believing in many deities, polytheism, theos, Greek for God. So were the Egyptians. Ever-changing pantheon and myths, as I mentioned. And so out of their belief system, something emerges out of all of their stories that is most significant to them, and that is that there was chaotic water they believed, in the world that existed before creation. It may sound familiar. Chaotic water existed before creation. There was a chaos monster, and that monster was named Apep, later took on different names, but Apep lived in that chaotic water. They believed that a mountain emerged out of the water. Eight gods emerged from this mountain that came up out of the Nile River. The gods fought and killed one another. Now, this is very significant when we look at ancient civilizations, especially the Near Eastern ones. The gods of these polytheistic systems all fight each other. Now, you're probably more familiar with maybe the Greek pantheon and how the Greek gods are always fighting one another or fighting humans, or humans are fighting them. And there's pettiness, and there's a lot of promiscuity among the godhead or among gods and people. That's true in the Egyptian belief system, and it seems to be true in all of these ancient Near Eastern belief systems. That is very different than what the Hebrews believed and what God revealed himself to be like. Ra emerged as sort of the head deity, and he's connected to the sun. And this is the most significant thing to the ancient Egyptians, was their cultus of practice of worship around the sun. So the sun came out of that mountain that came out of the Nile, and Ra, he defeated, in this creation myth, he defeats the snake god Apep, and he continues to defeat and keep back the god Apep every night to bring the sun back every day. And that's what's pictured here in this ancient hieroglyph. So you have the daytime sun being carried by Ra himself, and Ra's responsible for that sun going over the sky and then comes back around through the underworld, through the Nile River, under the world, and fights Apep, or keeps Apep away from stopping him, to bring the sun back around again the next morning. I'm going to talk about that sun cycle, but does anybody have any questions about Egyptian myths up to this point? Okay, so you can see, you know, I'm not getting into Osiris, I'm not getting into some of the different female deities, I'm not getting into the sub-deities that ruled the Nile and created the floods, those that look like hippopotamuses, those that look like cats, those that look like beetles. There's all kinds of, really interesting information to learn about that godhead. But for our purpose tonight, I want us to look at Ra and the sun cycle. Okay, so if you pull out your piece of paper here, I think this will be helpful for us for tonight. Ra and the sun cycle. Okay, so when we think about the sun cycle for the Egyptians, at the time the Israelites were living in Egypt, all the Egyptians around them believed that every morning, this is significant, every morning when the sun comes up, Egyptians, especially the priests, Egyptians would say, "Oh, he did it. Ra did it again. He brought the sun back. Ra has beaten Apep, and he's brought the sun back." So the morning was the time to be able to say, "Ra shines. Ra did it. Hurrah!" Right? He is the best. And so what they believed happened was that when Ra brought the sun up in the morning, what he was doing was he was getting into a boat called a bark. He was getting into a boat on the Nile River, and he was crossing the Nile River, the water, crossing the Nile River and making the sun go across the sky. So in the morning, here he comes on his boat in the Nile River and making the sun go. And that very, they called it a special time. They called it like the power time. It's a special Egyptian word. So that early morning, sun comes up, the Egyptians called that power time, right? Ra did it, power time. Okay. I want us to turn to Exodus. If you got your Bible, Exodus chapter 7. Yahweh has just told Moses that he's holy, so he is not like anything else. Nothing is like him. He is set apart. That's what holy means. His confusing name, which is confusing to us to this very day, I am who I am has sent you. What we understand from this is there is nothing like him. These gods of the pantheons around them are not like him. He's not like them. And so he's going to show them now who he is. Tell them Yahweh has sent you. And so we see that Pharaoh obeys and he goes down to talk to Pharaoh. And after the staff turning into the snake incident, he now begins with the first of the plagues. Chapter 7, verse 14. Then the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh's heart is stubborn, and he still refuses to let the people go. So go to Pharaoh in the morning. Isn't that interesting? In the morning. You say, well, why would that be in there? Here's why. In the morning, as he goes down to the river, stand on the bank of the Nile and meet him there. Be sure to take along the staff that turned into the snake, because that was the representation of Yahweh, remember? Then announce to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, not Ra, not any of their gods. It's the God of the Hebrews has sent me to tell you, let my people go so they can worship me in the wilderness. Until now, you've refused to listen to him. And so it will turn to blood, the river. And take your staff down there and sort of wave it over there. So look at verse 20. So Moses and Aaron did just as the Lord commanded them. As Pharaoh and all of his officials watched, Aaron raised his staff and struck the water of the Nile. Suddenly the whole river turned to blood. The river turned to blood. The fish in the river died, and the water became so foul that the Egyptians couldn't drink it. There was blood everywhere throughout the land of Egypt. Well, this is very clearly meant to be, as I mentioned earlier in that thesis statement, a way for Yahweh to say, I am who I am, I'm not like this, and I'm juxtaposed different than it, and I'm actually going to defeat, in a sense, what you believe in by showing you that what Ra is doing in his power time is nothing. It's not real. That he is the one who is in charge. And what does he turn to blood? The Nile River. That very thing that Ra is meant to be upon. In that power time, there's blood and death right there where Ra is supposed to be in his best moment. In midday, the Egyptians believed that at noontime was symbolized by the hooded cobra for the Egyptians. That's what they believed then, that Ra was present in the urea, is what it's called. The urea, which is the figure of a hooded cobra that the pharaoh wore on his body and usually on his head. And you've seen it with King Tut and other Egyptian things, the hooded cobra there on the head. You like my cobra? All right, yeah, yeah. It's not bad. Yeah, I bet it does. So noontime. And it was then when Pharaoh was powerful, because it was Ra now manifested in power, displayed in this hooded cobra. And just as the cobra spits venom, Ra can spit fire out of a pharaoh and kill anybody he wants to kill. So this is noontime while Ra is along the river at noon, bringing up the thing. That's when the urea is most powerful. What did we see in the story just before this? We don't have time to get into it. The story just before this, that's when Yahweh says, the first thing I want you to do is take that stick and throw it down in front of Pharaoh. Okay, throws it down. It becomes a cobra. It becomes a cobra. It becomes a snake. And, you know, it's sort of like, well, you know, who's in power here? Who is powerful? Is it Ra, midday Ra with his power through Pharaoh? Or is it Yahweh? He's not like these things. He is other than these things. He is the powerful one who will defeat. And so when the Egyptians create their little snakes out of their magic tricks. Hey, look, I got a staff. What's that over there? That's when lo and behold, Yahweh's snake eats theirs up. Eats them up. Yeah, because he's defeating them. He's not just okay with saying, I want to let you know I'm different. He's defeating these gods of the Egyptian pantheon. That's happening in the sun cycle. Then the final act of the sun cycle is to go at the very edge of the world where the Nile meets the horizon, and that's when Ra goes into the underworld to fight the chaos monster snake and keeps chaos back from the world by defeating Apep and goes under the underworld into the darkness place. But he's victorious every time, right? Because the sun keeps coming up. He's victorious every time. The last plague, and we don't have time to look at all the plagues, but the last plague, we see the death of the firstborn at night. It's at night. It's at night that these children die. And it's at night that God is actually the one who is in control of all things, including life. And the reason that chaos is kept back is not because of Ra and his ability to take a boat through the underworld, but because Yahweh is the one who is in charge of all things and has a plan to destroy chaos, which we know as the broken world, and ultimately the effect of these, which is sin and death. He is the one who is bringing about that ultimate change. So really, by the time the Israelites go through this episode of the plagues, the Egyptian pantheon is destroyed. The Egyptian pantheon is nothing like Yahweh. Tell them who I am. Give them my name. I'm nothing like anything else. I'm not like anything else. I'm different. Any questions on Ra and the sun cycle? Yeah.
How would the Egyptians view the darkness plague?
So the darkness plague is so significant. I put that down in my notes as well because the darkness thing would have been the most excruciating experience for the Egyptians, for all of a sudden the sun to be blotted out, because it means that Ra's not powerful. He's lost his power. And they had different things to explain eclipses. And so it was a part of this, and it was another way of Ra showing his power. But complete darkness everywhere except in the Hebrew land is clearly a sign of Yahweh saying that he is in fact the source of light, and the creation story shows us that, right? The biblical creation story shows us that Yahweh is the source of light. He is the one who said, let there be light, not Ra. So it's possible that the Israelites were so influenced by the Egyptians that they came out into the desert place, maybe even believing what the Egyptians believed in. It's possible. Maybe they syncretized Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, what they told them about Adam and Noah and up to Abraham. They might have syncretized. They may have held fast to it. It's possible. Not likely. Likely they needed to be shown. And when there's light in this land and darkness over there, the Egyptians are destroyed. Yeah. Good question. That's a very, very significant moment in those plagues. All of the plagues are designed around Egypt, but they're not just designed around beating the Egyptian gods. A good biblical scholar will also tell you there's a lot going on there that sure seems to be directed at Canaan, which is the land that they're going to. That's next.